Okay, folks, so here's the show. Heroes and Howlers.
And the rest is history.
My name's Mikey Robbins. I'm a bit of a history nerd, but my mate Paul Wilson...
Hi, everybody.
Paul's a proper historian, all the way from Oxford.
Thank you, Maggie. Okay, it's about those weird bits of history, the bizarre twists of fate.
The cock-ups, actually, mate, the stuff-ups that have made the world what it is today. Okay, folks, Mikey and Paul here. Look, you probably know by now, we've got a bit of a penchant for explorers.
That's right.
But today we're going to take a look at a different sort of explorer.
Very special kind of explorer, isn't it, Mikey, today?
And ones we actually love. I'm talking about those brave explorers who went out and didn't come back. Now, it's one we forget, because we like to think that Magellan...
Yes.
Yeah, went around the world. Well,
first man to go around the world, except...
He didn't come back.
He didn't make it, did he?
He made it as far as the Philippines then got involved in an intertribal war, which does not ever end well for a colonialist. And he died. But the day he was killed in the Philippines, it's still a national heavy drinking holiday.
Oh, is it?
It's a big...
So were they big fans of Magellan?
No.
No, mate, and still are.
In fact, along with Magellan's crew, not big fans of the man. Now, I'm thinking with your background, we're talking about...
Well, I was going to say, the big one, Scott Antarctic, isn't it? Brave old Captain Oates for me.
I'm just stepping out for some time.
And I was thinking with you, Mikey, with the Australia, I was going to say, Captain Cook Hawaii, but of course, you'll just tell me he was a Brit in disguise anyway. He wasn't really Australian.
And also, like Magellan, got involved in a tribal war he had no place being involved in.
That's right.
And it did not end well. No, actually, mate, being Australian, the story I want to focus on this episode, it is something we're all brought up on as kids.
Mm-hmm.
The Dig Tree.
Burke and Wills. I've seen that movie, in fact, mate.
Mate, it's been a movie. It's some of our greatest paintings.
There have been some
awful folk songs written about it.
And to give our listeners an idea here, Mikey, I think it's fair to say that in Australia, Burke and Wills, they're up there with Lewis and Clark in terms of intrepid explorers, except
for the cock-up that became the Dig Tree.
Right, yeah, but usually that's portrayed more as like the cruel and capricious Lady Luck befalling romantic heroes, isn't it? But what you're saying is...
That's the thing. Everyone concentrates on the tragic end.
Yeah.
My theory is, my challenge to the history books, the Burke and Wills expedition was tragic not just from the beginning, but before it even got started.
Before it got started,
it was a stuff up from conception to not coming back home again.
Can I just jump in here, Mikey, with a bit of background?
Sure, mate. Background away.
We're now in the mid-19th century, aren't we? And basically, at that time, folks, there were two massive blanks, if you like, on the imperial maps, in all those map rooms around the world. You had the heart of Africa.
The heart of darkness.
The heart of darkness, And then, particularly for Imperial Britain, it was that ghastly blank, the outback of Australia.
And in fact, ghastly blank was what they called it, saying that no one knew it was there. Let's not forget that people have been living there for 60,000
years. Quite a few Aborigines and Indigenous knew exactly where it was, but it... Today we call it the Red Centre, don't we, Maggie? But back then it really was a void.
Yeah, well, people didn't know what was there. For years there were theories of an inland sea. No, Australia had been determined to explore from coast to coast in particular. Now, you have to remember, from Sydney they had in West since 1813, Blackson, Wentworth and Lawson, who headed up the Parramatta Road.
That's they'd gone west out of Sydney, but by this stage, by the 1850s, all eyes are turning to that north-south crossing, weren't they, mate? Because if you look at those... If you don't mind.
Oh, it's map time.
Map time.
I can feel a map coming on. Okay, mate.
If you look at one of those maps from the early days, they're very, very interesting. Take this one, for example, Mikey, from 1827.
Another frame one, mate. So nice of you to bring it in from your home bathroom.
All right. But it is pretty fascinating, Mikey, isn't it? Because you can see here, the coastline is very accurate, very detailed, looking pretty much as maps of Australia look today.
Well, that's thanks to the Flinders expedition.
Yeah, that's right, Matthew Flinders. Yeah, the English sailor and the first man to navigate and circumnavigate the whole of the Australian continent. But then, down the middle, you've got this solid black line dividing the entire continent in two. And on this side, the left-hand side, it doesn't say Australia or even Terra Australis. It says...
New Holland.
New Holland, right. Because no matter what we Brits like to think about it, Captain Cook, not only did he not discover Australia...
Because generations of Indigenous people have been living here for thousands, tens of thousands of years.
Right. So not only were the Brits no discoverers, in European terms, they weren't even the first ones to land either.
Because that was actually Abel Tasman and the Dutch.
That's right. The Dutch had got there well over 100 years before them. Yeah, so this western half, even though there'd been no attempts to settle it, this western half, New Holland, had been named as the twin sister, if you like, for the other Dutch so-called discovery, New Zealand. Yeah, Zealand and Holland being the two major provinces in the Netherlands.
Hey, you see, folks, that's what an Oxford education gets you.
Right. Well, there you go. On the right-hand side, is the whole of the right-hand side is just one New South Wales, which... And yeah,
it always strikes me as bizarre because Cook calls us New South Wales, right? Now, I've been to Wales once as a kid. I'm assuming you've been to Wales quite a few times.
Well, that's it, Mikey. Every time I go home, but people always say to me, why is it called New South Wales? We've seen the pictures of Bondi Beach. It doesn't really look...
No. Seriously, you don't see Dylan Thomas at Maroubra.
Exactly. And there was a story, you'll know this better than me, but there's a story... Cook himself actually wanted to originally call it just New Wales.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they had a look at some of the drawings that were done by people on the Endeavour expedition.
Yeah.
And they went, it looks nothing like Wales. He went, okay.
Yeah, that's not dark and bleak and Snowdonia. No. Oh, it's New South Wales.
Yeah, Cook must have been up all night coming up with
the
new name.
It's the Gower Peninsula. Okay, folks, we're back in the mid-19th century for today's episode. We're talking about the push to explore the harsh interior of the Australian continent.
And the race that would culminate in the tragedy that was the Birkenwills expedition.
Right.
An expedition which in many ways came about because of one of the key inventions of the period, the telegraph.
That's right, because the telegraph... So British Empire had got the telegraph going all over the world, but at the time it stopped. In terms of going south, down into the southern hemisphere, it stopped... In India.
Yeah.
And so the big thing down in Australia was who's going to be in charge of the telegraph and which way is it going to go? Because obviously coming from India, there's a big gap across the Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
Is it going to keep going around the coast? Is it going to go by the sea? Or can they organise a direct route straight across the land?
And this is basically the 19th century version of running Australia's Wi-Fi hotspot. So everyone wants it.
But the, NBN.
Exactly. But there's another real reason as well, mate.
Right.
This is particularly when it comes to Birkenwills.
Yeah.
We're talking good old-fashioned intercity, interstate as it becomes, rivalry.
Sure.
Melbourne wants to stick it to Sydney.
Right, and for those of you who don't know, folks, Melbourne basically always wants to stick it to Sydney.
It's what Melbourne does best, and Sydney's gotten used to it.
And it's a weird one because Sydney sometimes is seen as like this sort of brash upstart, but of course it, with the First Fleet, 1788, it was the main headquarters for Australia for a long, long time. I think the state of Victoria didn't come along till what, 1851?
Well, it's pretty much on
they tried Melbourne and then they left again because they didn't like it the first time.
Exactly, but they're starting to find gold around the Ballarat area.
Sure.
And that money is turning Melbourne into a real city.
Right.
But you're right. Whereas today is it seen that, Sydney's sort of brash and superficial and Melbourne's, a bit more establishment and
marvellous Melbourne.
Yeah, but...
Second city of the empire and all that stuff, yeah.
Back in the 1850s,
No,
Sydney's seen as the establishment and Melbourne's the new bright up-and-coming city. It's the on-the-go city.
Right, and it's also because it's got the other one it wants to stick to as well. Mikey talks about these state rivalries. And if it's one thing you hate more than Sydney, wasn't it? You hated Adelaide.
Let's face it, it's not just a Melbourneian thing. Hi, Adelaide, how's it going? There's an old saying, if you ever go to Adelaide, never take a dump in the morning, so you've got something to do at night.
I
love Adelaide.
Right.
But there was a thing, because a lot of exploration was coming out of Adelaide.
That's right. Because South Australia had been founded, 1836?
And also, too, founded by free settlers.
That's right.
Adelaide do love to remind you about that.
And they had some of the great explorers. Charles Sturt had come out from Sydney, but he was doing a lot of stuff with the Murray Darling, and he was pushing up. But Adelaide, they've got their own rival hotshot guy.
Stuart.
I always get mixed
up. This is always tough learning Australian history in the school.
Yeah.
Because you had Stuart and Sturt going around at the same time. So Melbourne's looking at the Stuarts, the Sturts, all the expeditions. They go, right, we need our own expedition.
Our turn. It's our turn. We need someone to carry the fight for Victoria. We need someone to put Melbourne on the map. And hopefully try and find a route for the telegraph line at the same time. So the telegraph line will come to Melbourne rather than come to Adelaide. Is that right?
Yep. So the idea is that they're going to head up to the Gulf of Carpentaria. Now, this is where... tough to start with, but here's where it goes pear-shaped from the beginning. So instead of just, finding a great explorer, Melbourne does what public service does best.
Mm-hmm.
they get a committee going.
Oh dear, yes. Yeah. So the old committee, if you're inventing a horse and the committee comes up with a camel or something, isn't it? Camels could be useful for this trip.
The old saying is, a camel is a horse designed by a committee.
There you go.
And in fact, it's good that you mentioned camels. We'll get to them in a second.
I knew camels going to come
into camels this. Do come into this, but we're going to start with the person they chose to be the leader of the expedition. Because you see, Paulie, there are all manner of famous explorers that they could have chosen. Every great explorer and his dog was putting their hand up to have a go.
But
instead, this nitpicky committee of nobodies...
They chose
a complete dropkick. A local cop, just because he was in with the powers that be.
Ah, so it's a stitch-up, a backhanded job for the boys.
100%, mate. They chose this bloke, and it's a name that has gone down in history. They chose Robert O'Hara Burke.
Robert O'Hara Burke. Now, that might not ring everyone's bell for those listeners outside of Australia, but ask all your Aussie mates, I promise you, they'll tell you this Burke fellow, he's a dead set good'un, and usually well worth a place in our series of heroes. But what you're saying, Mikey, is that he should have gone down as a howler.
Right, just listen to this from a contemporary's notes describing Burke's personality.
Okay.
He was a stickler for military discipline and procedure, but notoriously slovenly and eccentric in his personal life.
Not a good combination.
Gets better. He was moody, impulsive, and liable to emotional outbursts when he felt his authority threatened.
Ooh.
So, for some reason, because Burke is well-connected, and also, too, he's got a bit of a reputation for being a hard taskmaster, which goes
hard-nosed policeman,
which goes back to his days on the goldfields, where he was like the scourge of the diggers, quite frankly.
Okay, got you.
So he gets the gig, and then we get the second in command.
So Wills is much better.
No, see, here's the thing: Wills was never the second in command at the start. We'll get him later.
Okay.
Now, the second in command at the start of the exhibition was a bloke who history's forgotten, George James Landells.
I've never heard of George James Landell. Sorry,
Mikey. Well, you will a bit in a moment, mate. And this brings us back to we mentioned camels before.
Right.
Landells had been basically working for the East India Company.
Right.
And he was in India.
Yeah.
And he was an expert with camels. You know?
Right, yeah.
And it was decided that camels would be the ships of the desert for this expedition.
Right.
So he's in charge of the camels.
Now, bit I did know, because they brought all the Afghan and the Indian camels down, didn't they?
Yeah,
exactly. To explore the desert. Yeah.
In fact, on my grandfather's side, I'm supposed to have some Afghani camel herder heritage.
Mm.
There you go. And so, why is he running so fast? You don't want to get an ugly camel. You know the joke. Anyway, so he's in charge of the 24 camels.
Yeah.
But because of that, he's also in charge of all the livestock. And even though he's second in charge of the expedition, because he's the expert at the camels and no one else is, he's getting paid more than Burke.
Mm.
So Burke is
never going to go down well, is it? No.
Burke is already ticked off before the expedition starts.
Yeah, okay.
And he's a man who likes to be in a bad mood anyway.
Right. So Burke and Landells, this new expedition, isn't going to go... Well, who's Wills then?
Okay, Wills is third in charge. And quite frankly, Wills is a good call.
Okay.
He's actually a qualified surveyor, which you'd think would be a good thing on an expedition.
Yep.
And also to quite a handy DIY surgeon, which once again is
going to be useful. Okay, so here we are, folks. Yeah. So we're in 1860. It's August 1860, and we are starting off on the ill-fated Burke and Wills, or Landells, expedition across Australia from south to north in the hope of finding a route that the telegraph line will be able to run down to make Melbourne, the greatest city in the country.
And also to find as much pastoral land and gold.
And gold and seas and whatever they can.
So it's August.
Crocodiles.
Exactly. August 20th, 1860.
Yep.
15,000 Melburnians have assembled in the park to cheer off.
That's about half the city. In those days.
It was a fair whack of the city.
Yeah.
But let's face it, Melbourne does like going to events more than Sydney does, because Sydney's up itself.
Right.
So 15,000 Melburnians turn off to cheer off the 26 camels, because they've imported 24.
Yeah.
And they...
Where's the other two?
They managed to borrow them from a local zoo.
They just pulled a couple of camels out the zoo.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
23 horses.
Right.
19 men. And here's the first mistake, and it doesn't sound like a mistake at the start.
Right.
A massive supply of dried food stores, dried meats.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
You'd think so, but think about this. You've got meat dried, you've got to carry it.
Right, okay.
So as opposed to a lot of expeditions that
It would have been, if they just had live sheep or cattle, that would have been, and herded them up a lot, as they were going, it would have been a lot easier.
The thing about this, the Royal Navy used to take live sheep on its ships and slaughter them.
Yep.
It was easy, it actually makes more sense.
It makes a lot more sense, got it. But supplies wasn't the strong point. Who was in charge? Was that Wills or Landells, do you reckon?
Well, a lot of Burke. Burke, because...
Talk me through this supply chain.
What I'm about to read you, this is actually from the inventory.
Right.
They had rockets and flares to set off if they, got lost.
That's all right.
Well, think about it. You're in the middle of the desert. If you're setting off rockets and flares, the only people...
No one lives.
And also, A, you'll probably start a bushfire. B, the only people who will see them will be indigenous. They'll go...
They aren't going to come and help.
Something's happening.
Yeah.
A travelling barbershop.
Oh, yeah, for your whiskers. They did like the whiskers in the 1860s, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah. What they had was basically a travelling barber shop that could cater
with
to...
With a barber?
I'm assuming probably Wills was the surgeon.
Then
it gets weirder.
Go on.
A six-foot-tall filing cabinet, as you do.
They're carrying a six-foot-tall filing. Just in case, just to keep all the invoices.
It's a lot of invoices on a trip like that. An oak dining table with matching oak stools.
I'm glad they're matching. I'm glad they were matching, Mike. You don't want to be taking any old stool, do you?
And also, let's face it, there are a lot lighter woods than oak if you're going to build a bloody dining table anyway. Jeez. But to make sure they're comfortable, and this was the height of technology at the time, inflatable cushions.
What whoopee cushions?
Non-whoopee cushions.
Go on.
To sit and have your dinner with.
Right.
And probably the greatest waste of space of all, a full-size Chinese dinner gong.
Oh, you're kidding. Right. Like the one on the...
The old RKO. Basically, it's the same dinner's ready.
Right, go on. So
this is leaving...
August 20th, 1860. We are leaving... We're getting ready with 15,000 people, you reckon?
Yes, and they're waving them off. And they're waving them off.
And off they go.
No, they don't even get out of eyesight.
Go on.
And the first wagon breaks down.
Breaks down under the weight of all those needless oak tables and dinner gongs.
And for the next 2 days,
the
wagons get stuck in the mud because it starts to rain.
Okay.
And in fact, they didn't leave Melbourne.
They didn't leave, so for 2 days they don't even leave Melbourne.
Eventually they get to the outer suburbs of Melbourne.
Okay. So they've lost 3 wagons, but that's okay. Off they go.
They're moving stuff around and they're repairing as they go.
On the horses, back on the camels.
It is raining, and they trudge through, and in 2 months, they reach Menindee.
Menindee?
Yes.
That's okay, isn't it? 2 months, that's quite intrepid.
To find the town of Menindee?
Yeah.
Problem is, someone had already found it before. In fact, right. Menindee had been around for ages. It's a lovely town, and it actually had a regular mail coach from Melbourne that took 2 weeks to get there.
But so they've taken 2 months to get to a town that... Loads of people already live in and has a mail service that only takes two weeks.
So it's taking them 4 times as long as the regular stagecoach to get there.
Okay.
And that's when the hits the fan for the first time. By this stage, Landells has had enough of Burke.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
He resigns.
Oh, resigns. Yep. So this is why. So he's out. Landells is out. Yep. Wills is in. This is when it becomes the real Burke and Wills. Okay.
Exactly. But that's not before two officers packing in as well.
Okay.
And just to make things even more complicated, Burke goes, well, in that case, I'm going to fire 13 blokes.
Oh, hang on. So they only had 19 to start. So they're down to the bare bones. Okay,
And
what did Landells say?
This is great. By the time it takes Landells to go back to Melbourne, which didn't take 2 months, by the way, he writes a report.
Mm.
This is Landells' report. I'm reading this word for word. And this is quite prescient. The expedition will be attended by the most disastrous results.
Mm.
His conduct throughout, meaning Burke, has displayed such a want of judgment, candour and decision as to at once destroy my entire confidence and respect.
Ooh.
I have on several occasions entertained grave doubts of his sanity.
Ooh.
He usually carried loaded firearms and I was fearful that he would use them injudiciously whilst in a passion. See, Ooh. That's not a paragraph you want to put on your CV.
No, that is tough.
So Landell's heading back to Melbourne to file that report.
He's gone.
And then the most famous part of the journey begins when they strike off to Cooper's Creek.
Right, so they've got some new guys in. And I think they pick the strongest horses, six or seven of the top men.
Six camels. And they head off north to the next stop is Cooper's Creek, which is as far as Europeans had gotten into the inland.
Right, okay. So that up until then, they sort of knew what they were doing, or they hoped they knew what they were doing.
They're basically going through discovered land.
Right, but after Cooper's Creek, it was all new.
Everything from Cooper's Creek is new land for Europeans.
And for people who don't know that, Cooper's Creek's about in the middle.
Yeah.
Everything north of that is either hot, dusty, swamp, or crocodile infested. Is that about right, Mikey?
It's basically the stuff that we tell people like you when they first arrive in a country, what the rest of the country's like.
Yeah, lots of drop bears.
And, exactly. So when they get to Cooper's Creek, and this should have been a sign, they set up their first camp and they have to move it because the camp's attacked by a plague of rats.
Ooh.
So that should be a giveaway.
And by now, what? So now we're in
It's early.
Spring. It's getting towards summer. It's summer. Getting hot.
Wise heads counsel Berkeley should wait for autumn, you know, and build up supplies again.
Yeah, and makes sense.
But Robert O'Hara Burke, policeman Plod, he says, no, we're leaving. We're setting off tomorrow.
And I don't care what the weatherman says.
Mm. Heads off on the 16th of December into the most disgusting heat he can, into a desert.
And so that's the middle of summer. So rather than wait till autumn, he says, no, I'm going to go for it now, middle of summer, just when it's at its hottest, its hardest. Right, okay.
Without enough supplies. He knows he doesn't have enough supplies. Well, people are telling him doesn't have enough supplies.
Yeah.
But he goes, no, I'm going to do this. And as most Aussie schoolboys and schoolgirls know.
And the rest is history.
He does, to be fair, he makes it. He does get to the north coast, doesn't he? Yeah. In about February 1861. But
he never quite cracks the beach, but he gets close enough.
Right, yeah, he can see water. Yeah. He can see crocodiles. But and then there's the monsoon season, is that right? And they've run out of, like you're saying, all their food. They've now got half as much food as they should have had.
And people start getting dysentery and they've run out of food. And when you run out of food, it is never a good sign for the pack animals. Suddenly, camels just go missing.
And it's not just the camels, right? Because they leave two of the men.
Yep, a grand king get left behind. Now, king, of course, is the person who survives.
He's the one survivor.
From which we know the story, of course, you know, the dig tree, the second search party misses them by a day.
They come back to the tree and they've missed them by a night. It's twice they were complete fluke or anti-fluke, wasn't it? Because they missed each other twice.
But, you know, as I said before, look, we all know the story of the dig tree and it's tragic. But quite frankly, this expedition was a total up.
It certainly was.
It was a cluster from even before it left Melbourne.
But I think what you like about this, Mikey, is the modern repercussions, isn't it? Because, you know, Melbourne, your favourite city.
I love Melbourne.
Melbourne spends the next 50 years in Adelaide's shadow. Adelaide's Stuart expedition is the massive success. Adelaide gets the telegraph lines. Adelaide and Alice Springs get the Garn Railway. And Melburnians, they're left scratching their bums for a generation.
Although some, not me, but some would say it's been downhill for Adelaide ever since. Once again, not me.
All right, so what are we looking at, Mikey? We took it in fluke, cock-up, hand of God. Surely it's got to be catastrophic cock-ups.
Yeah. For me, Paulie, we in Australia all know that Burke and Wills ended in disaster at the dig tree.
Yeah.
But I think we now know that the entire expedition, from the moment of its shambolic inception, was a pathetic, dare I say, inglorious shit show.
All right, so that's the end of the show, folks. Any questions or anything we've missed about Burke and Wills or Landells? Yeah, please drop us a line.
Yeah, anything about Landells, because we'd like to know more about that bugger.
I want to know more about that guy, yeah. Drop us a line on all your social media using the handle at and the rest is hist.
And the rest is hist. And you can find all that stuff in the show notes.
Okay, and if you like the podcast, don't forget to like, subscribe and comment, you know, whichever platforms you usually use to listen to your podcasts.
Okay, Paul, your turn next. What do you got for us?
Well, it's back to my homeland on this one, Mikey. Yeah, remember the 5th of November.
Ah, gunpowder, treason and plot.
Well, you might think so, mate. At least, you know, that's what they teach us at school. But you might also want to bring with you next week Flowers of Scotland, Kilts and Sporrans, and a good side helping of haggis.
And I will not do my Scotsman impression.
Okay,
it's worse than Mel Gibson's.
All right, catch you all next week.